Well, I'll go first. I'll say for me.
You just pointed at me, Kyle.
Oh shoot, my bad, dude. Go
no,
ahead.
No, no,
go
you ahead. Already started.
Are you sure?
Well, you already started.
All right,
well,
I quit. You guys are fighting again. No, I'm joking.
I like how he's like, I'll go first.
Yeah. I'm in the middle.
Mr. Middleman wants to go first. Yeah. Rooster.
Billy and I have locked eyes for the last 45 seconds.
I know. It's hard for me to be like,
well, there's. I don't know if you know, there's these listeners, there's two cameras now, if you couldn't figure it out from the angle. So
yeah.
I'm not Which surprised that Kyle's not like.
Yeah, try to get in your camera.
Yeah. Oh, let me hear it. Yeah.
This is why we kick Billy off the show, because he's always dogging on me.
That's fine.
You make it really hard to do.
It's true.
Mark, so let me ask you that question.
No, I'm uncomfortable now.
You're uncomfortable now? Okay.
Sorry.
No, go ahead, dude. Go. Actually, go. I don't want to go funny. First now. Hey, everyone. Have you ever wondered how this podcast got started and how we got to do what we're doing, our career paths that we chose in law enforcement, and what it's like to actually be on the front lines of a protest? We're going to cover all that on today's episode. This is the Shots Fired Podcast. I'm Kyle Schoberg. We've got Mark Redlich, and Billy is back in studio. Welcome
back,
Billy. You actually made it. Thank you.
But before we get started, drop a comment below for your opportunity to win this medic box and the contents that are in it. One of the items that comes in it is this 11-in-1 multi-shear combo. This thing is guaranteed for life. All kinds of neat stuff in here. Check it out, enter for your opportunity to win, and we will ship it to you free of charge.
All right, so let's get into how this podcast even started, how we became about. We're in this cool little studio that we have now, but let's share where we first started and go back a little bit into memory lane, which was honestly how this whole thing started, which was me and Billy in my driveway having a beer over a bonfire, and I had this crazy idea, and I remember asking Billy, thinking to myself, he was going to say no, and then I was going to just find somebody else to help me do it. And lo and behold, when I said, hey, Billy, I've got this crazy idea. Are you think you'd be down? And he's like, the guy that he is, he goes, yeah, what is it? I go, let's start a podcast. And literally he just goes, okay, sure, let's do it. And I don't think you even knew what a podcast probably was when I asked you. The reason I wanted to do it, though, honestly, was because I had been invited on to a person's podcast. It was Mic Drop with Mike Ritland. If you haven't seen it, check out his YouTube channel. And I got to share some pretty cool, unique stories that I had been involved in as a police officer. And I thought it was really cool that he had me on his show. He's got a large following. And most of the content that those guys share are military guys sharing their incredible stories, you know, in overseas and war and all those things, and you know, mainly special forces operation guys. And so for him to allow me to share my stories, I thought was really cool. And I got to thinking about it. There wasn't a whole lot of police officers putting themselves out on YouTube or even doing podcasts and allowing other police officers to share their stories. You know, some of these stories guys struggle with, and, you know, cops have always just been kind of tucked away in the shadows, and that's just the way it's always been. So I thought it was a cool, unique opportunity to do that. And so this was kind of around during COVID time, not a lot was going on. And that is truly why we came up with the idea to even start this podcast in the first place. It was literally just to start a platform to provide other law enforcement or any first responders their chance to share their unique stories and some of the things that they've done, and bridge the gap between communities and policing. And that's why our motto is it literally is a podcast for everybody. So that's truly how this whole thing got started. And when I invited Billy to do it, you obviously agreed to do it with me. We didn't know anything about podcasting, YouTube, this equipment, lighting, cameras. We had none of it. Literally, we didn't know anything about it. And it was more just like, you agreed to do it. So I was like, okay, well, now we're going to do it.
What did we even do the first episode on?
Oh, dude, it was horrible. Yeah, it was, I don't even know. I think we were sitting in my kid's bedroom with like a disgusting brick background behind us.
Yeah, I tripped over some dinosaur or some T-Rex or something.
Yeah, so
I still hate that thing, just so you know.
So where we started was my kid's playroom at my house. We basically evicted them, which they weren't too happy about.
An unlawful
eviction. Yeah, we definitely unlawfully evicted them. In fact, I remember them asking me, they're like, Dad, what happened to our playroom? And I had explained to them that we're going to be doing this podcast now, which they didn't know what it was.
It was like, what playroom?
Yeah, and so, dude, we went to Home Depot. We bought wood to build our first table.
Oh, yeah. It was like 2x4s and
horrible.
And plywood, I think, right?
Yeah, it was terrible. We just like threw
a sheet over the top of it or something. No, I don't even think.
No, we just stained. Like we just built this table that we went to Home Depot. We bought the wood to build it. That thing's in the dump. No, that thing is in the dump. But that was our first like podcast table. Then we bought some microphones, and then we bought a couple microphone stands. And you know, then we had to research on the equipment you needed. And so next thing you know,
headphones and everything. I remember the full headphone thing going.
Yep, you had white ones. I had black ones. It was a disaster.
I had straight up.
Were they
like Beats by Dre?
Yeah, but and I don't even think they worked.
But I think they were knockoffs. I think only one ear actually worked. It
was horrible. Horrible. So that was really how this whole thing started. Like, we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know where it was going to go. And then we started doing them. And long and behold, we actually had some positive feedback from some people that started seeing them. And then we just became kind of consistent with it. We started doing them in my kid's bedroom. My girlfriend, Stephanie, was... playing pranks on us while we were doing our shows. And I think about,
I think she turned the heat on like every single time.
Oh yeah. Middle of summer
would be so hot. I remember
sweating. And about the 10th episode, I think, Mark, I called you and I'm like, hey man, we're doing this podcast thing. Like, we had some janky camera that I bought at Best Buy that was like horrible. I'm like, do you want to come on this podcast with us and do it like an episode with us? And you were, and honestly, I actually thought you were going to say no. And to my surprise, you were like, yeah, let's do it. And you're like fired up about it. And I'm like, all right, cool. Mark comes over. We do our episode with you talking about SWAT and all those things. And then Mark just kept showing up after that to my house.
Well, I think like Mark brought the order that we probably greatly needed.
Yeah.
Like we were just straight chaos, I think. Like, just like, yeah, we'll figure it out. And that's kind of how we did it. And then Mark's like, no, this is, you know, I think after you started coming back a few times, like, no, we should do this, and you're like, and you and I'd be like, oh yeah, that's really, why didn't we do that in the first place?
Yeah, I was on a podcast before that, and I was like, oh man, Kyle has a podcast, I'll do that. I've known Kyle forever. And then I remember showing up and then going in your kid's playroom, and I was like, what? Like, this is not what I expected. And your kids are like all crying because
we did
a
good job of hiding it, though, that it was literally
any idea that it was in my kid's play. And the room that we had to operate in was so minimal. Like, to even sit in our chairs to like do it was like, we're crammed in there.
I remember I had to climb under the table to get to the chair.
To take a bathroom break, you're like, I don't want to go to the bathroom, but I have to go so bad because you can't get out.
It was almost like surveillance peas in the bottle.
Yeah, it was pretty aimlessly just like trying to figure it out as we went. And it was a lot of watching YouTube videos. I mean, I had to buy like a nice computer to then start to like edit these, and then learning how to edit. I didn't know how to edit. So learning the editing piece.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, it's all right, guys. I figured it out for us. But learning how to do that, you know, dabbling into just hours of YouTube videos on, you know, how to do all of this and make it all come together. And here we are today, you know, with our own studio. And I think we've done a pretty good job of building this podcast up. And it's really cool now when we go out of town or we go teach classes, just people coming up to us that recognize us. We go out in public, people recognize us and come up to us. And I think it's really cool where we've gone with this, and I think we've helped out a lot of people. You know, we've really built our social media with this platform and giving people the voice and doing what we intended to do. We stayed true to our mission, and we're going to keep doing it and keep growing it. And I just, you know, we often have been getting asked lately, like, how did this even come about? And that truly is what it is. It was just, it was an idea of like
garage beers and
in a bonfire,
bad decisions or good decisions. Depending on how you look at it.
Yeah,
so I remember some funny stories going over to your house, showing up with pizza, eating, hanging out in your kitchen, and then saying, hey, all right, you guys ready to go do a podcast? And then your girlfriend would be like, okay, you guys are going to go play. And then we'd go in there, and then, like, the temperature was fine. And then there's a lot of times I remember you having to slide the back window open. We're like, why is it so hot in here?
Oh, wow.
It's heater blowing. We used to close the vent. We're like, God, and then we'd go out, and you're like, did you turn the heater on? And then we found out she was messing with us and turned the heater on.
Yeah.
She thought it was quite funny. And it was funny because we never knew. I don't even think we knew what we were going to talk about when we went into the room to start talking. It was just, we would hit record and we would just start flapping our gums and then come up with some form of content that we would talk about. And then we were kind of relying on guests and stuff to, you know, what they would pitch stuff to us on YouTube. And we're like, all right, yeah, we'll talk about that. And then we got into like movie reactions, you know, watching that.
But that was fun.
It was.
What was
it
that was one, the first one that was?
Into Watch?
Into Watch. That one killed it on videos. That out of nowhere, we're like, wow, that one's doing really good. It's still doing good.
Yeah. I will say I'm impressed for a couple of three street cops who knew nothing about any of this to slap all that together and put out like quality stuff. I'm actually pretty proud of like the stuff that we actually did. I thought it turned out cool and like where we've grown. And I'm very proud of
still
all
don't know
of it.
How, but
I don't know. Either. I have no idea, but we appreciate everybody that's ever supported us. I mean, seriously, like without all of you, we would not be here today. We wouldn't even have kept doing it. So that's what's been driving us to continue to do it.
I guess I can't talk much about keep doing it because.
Let's talk about why Billy went away for a little while. And you know,
we get asked that a lot.
We do get asked that a lot.
A lot.
People drop comments on our YouTube videos.
Where's Billy?
Yeah, where's Billy?
Loves me,
yeah, where's like, Billy?
Look
what
at this
happened?
Face. Listen, like, who wouldn't love this face?
There was a comment we just got probably 2 or 3 weeks ago on like one of our newer videos that we just put out. I don't remember which one, but it was like, hey, I just coming back to your channel, hadn't been around in a while or whatever. Like what happened to the third guy, Billy? Like where is he at? And so
that was my burner account.
You're the one
that's over there. Like, where's Billy?
I just have like 10 of them. Probably. I just sent you random messages every once in a while.
Just see what his response is.
It makes sense. Like, but
that guy was the best. Yeah. I really loved him.
I knew it sounded like you, your tone, the way you write.
Yeah. Well, if I could write, I mean, I had to do just chat GPT or whatever. Well,
smart.
Voice text, please write.
Yeah. That's probably true.
So you want to tell people what was going on?
Yeah, just, I mean, the short story is just priorities took me in a different direction. And those priorities, it's not that this has become a priority now. I mean, I'll be completely honest, you know, work has taken me to be fairly busy. And with that, I just made the decision that my free time, I wanted to spend it with family. And, you know, I'd still see you guys. And it was just this is a commitment. You guys very much know that. Mm-hmm. And you guys have committed a lot more to it than me. And, you know, another reason that I stepped away is I felt like I kind of was like, making things difficult sometimes was part of my issue. It was like, oh, I can't do it this time. I can't do it this time. And, you know, I was basically the problem on scheduling and stuff. So part of it was just, I didn't want to be a problem and I had different priorities.
Well, I think what people don't see behind the camera is the scheduling and everything that goes into putting one of these podcasts together, right? You got three different guys all working full-time jobs. We're still in law enforcement. We still have our jobs. Mark's a busy guy. You're running multiple hospitals. It's like to try to get three people on three different schedules together in one place, it is very difficult to do. And then you're talking about having guests come on and you know, running around their schedules. You know, like today, scheduling even to do today, like with all three of us.
It was like a last minute.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
Is it gonna work?
Well, I mean, I think I've been fortunate with dealing with you guys. And you brought up the guest thing is like dealing with you guys understand.
Yeah.
You guys 100% understood that right now I could get a call and I'm gone.
Yep.
And you guys totally respect that and everything. But when there's a guest coming and they're like scheduled and sometimes from out of town or something like that, it's like, hey, I'm out.
Yeah.
That's what ended up happening. It was, I think a couple times that happened, like, hey, I just can't make it.
Yeah.
And you guys filled in and did a great job. And that's why I started to look like, hey, they got it.
Well, I think what I noticed too, is that when we moved from your kids' room and we started to grow pretty fast
and then
we got an actual studio. And then it's like, okay, well, we got to start doing some more. And then it just became more time consuming. And then priorities, like you were saying, it's like your work is a priority. My work is more flexible and I'm not on call. So I don't have that restriction, but it definitely got to the point where it's like, it became so time consuming. Like, how do we manage? How do you manage? And
Well, you know, here's the thing too. It's like the cool thing for me is like, you know, people don't see this, but first of all, you live next to me, like a few houses down. We've always maintained a super good friendship. Like all three of us have always maintained a friendship. We hang out all the time and that never, like that was never taken away from us. You know, a lot of people who get involved in businesses with friends and stuff, you know, things fall apart. Like, here's the thing, being totally transparent, we have arguments too. Like, yeah. we just had one. So it's true though. Like, that's how you get better, I think, is you got to be able to communicate if you're going to do a business together. This is a business. You know, we're not always going to agree on things. Like, even pre-podcasting, like, we may all have three different ideas of what we want to talk about.
Right.
And, you know, we did today. Like,
yeah.
So there's that, you know, but being able to maintain the friendship thing is always, I think, going to be priority to all of us. And
yeah, I just think, like, you know, part of it is people don't realize that. So let's say this episode ends up being an hour long, which it probably won't be, but say it's an hour long. That's probably like an hour and a half to 2 hours of recording right there.
Yeah.
And then there was an hour before we got here.
Yeah, the prep.
That we were prepping. And that's because you guys from, I don't know, this is not the playroom anymore. This place is pretty set up.
Yeah.
You know, the playroom was even like an hour and a half, 2 hours more, because we had to clean it up every time. But, and then when we're done, there's another half hour at least of cleanup.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I never did the after work, I guess, of editing and stuff like that, where this very rapidly started to feel like a job for me at some point. And that's not why I got into it. I didn't get into doing this with you and you to make money, to be famous, to do anything like that. I got into it to have a good time with friends and chat, and hopefully teach some people some things, or let them, you know, open the door to what this job really is.
Yeah. And I think we all still want to do that. And that's why we're all three sitting here today, is we want to have fun. It's three dudes just having a conversation, but also providing some type of content or context for people to learn from. And that's why we're going to talk about some of the things that we're going to chat about today. Speaking of your career path and the job that you're doing now, to, you know, which kind of hindered you in doing this full time with us. You know, you are a busy guy, and you asked me the other day, we were actually hanging out, having a beer with each other. And you were like, hey, do you think your career chose you, or did you choose your career? And that's actually a pretty good question. I don't think I've ever actually been asked that before.
Yeah. And I think, like, I mean, you could even talk about, did your career as a law enforcement officer choose you, or did your, you know, or did you choose it? I mean, that's a whole nother thing. I do always say that law enforcement is a calling. If you're just in it for the money and for the retirement, maybe the retirement's pretty good, but the money can be really shitty.
Yeah. Depending on where you work.
Don't get in it for the, there's better jobs out there. They'll pay better. And
you know, the hours are better.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You're on holidays. Yeah.
But once you're in it, it's very rewarding. Very rewarding. I think everyone here would agree with that. And I think all the listeners that are actually in law enforcement, I would say 99% would say, very rewarding job. But like, there's so many different paths, especially you and I working for larger agencies, and you're smaller, so you were kind of limited, I think, on those. But I asked you, like, within your path, did you say, hey, this is my end all goal. This is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do. And from day one, was that the same goal? And did you keep doing it? And then that was it. That was the goal. And you worked towards that goal.
Well, I'll go first. I'll say, for me,
you just pointed at me, Kyle.
Oh, shoot. My bad, dude. Go
ahead. No,
go ahead.
You already started.
Are you sure?
Well, you already started.
All right,
well,
I quit. You guys are fighting again. No, I'm joking.
I like how he's like, I'll go first.
I'm in the middle.
Mr. Middleman wants to go first. Yeah, yeah. Rooster.
Billy and I have locked eyes for the last 45 seconds.
I know. It's hard for me to be like,
If you know, there's the listeners, there's two cameras now, if you couldn't figure it out from the angle. So
yeah.
I'm not Which surprised that Kyle's not like,
yeah, try to get in your camera.
Yeah. Oh, let me hear it. Yeah, yeah.
This is why we kick Billy off the show, because he's always dogging on me.
That's funny.
You make it really hard to do.
It's true.
Mark, so let me ask you that question.
No, I'm uncomfortable now.
You're uncomfortable now? Okay.
Sorry.
No, go ahead, dude. Go. I don't want to go first now.
I always wanted to be on the SWAT team. It was just something that I wanted even before law enforcement, and then getting into law enforcement as my career started going. That's what I wanted, and that's what I kept focusing on. And I did test for other units, crime suppression unit, the gang team. I didn't get picked for those, but SWAT is what I wanted. We're a full-time team. It's one of the handful ones in the state of California. That's where I wanted. I mean, I went out and volunteered constantly with those guys to see who they were, what they did, to see a different perspective. I interviewed and tested for it 5 times and never got picked. I mean, to this day, there's jokes about me interviewing, and one of my answers was I would drive the Bearcat to the front door and block the door. It was a total, I have no idea, like, because we talked about in the past, interviewing's a skill, but that's always what I wanted to do. And then the 6th time I interviewed, I was picked for it. And honestly, like, I'm not gonna say you're shoulder tapped, but you know that the team wants you, you right. know that management wants you. You are the one that they want, and you just have to do good enough to get in that top rank where they can pick you. In the times before, I was at one and I couldn't get that. I just wasn't good enough at an interview to get picked. And it was crushing. Other guys that got it over me were just as solid guys. They were deserving. And the 6th time that I interviewed, I did well enough where they could actually pick me.
How many guys do you think put in for a spot, they fail that many times, and then they just give up completely and they're like, all right, I'm never going to get picked.
I know one other guy that interviewed
a lot,
5 times for SWAT. I think I have the record for the most.
Yeah.
So it's like this podcast, like I just wasn't going to not continue to try.
Yeah. It's perseverance, which is something you want on a team like that, you know, like that no quit.
Yeah.
And you know, knowing what you wanted to do, and you're like, this is what I'm going to do. I don't care that you tell me 4 or 5 times that I'm not good enough or there's someone better.
Yeah.
And I think you should always try until somebody who has the ultimate decision says to you, look, dude, you're never going to be on the team. Like, stop wasting our time.
Even then, I mean, like, I don't think you should stop trying then. I think that maybe you should
get better
or,
like, figure out your deficiencies.
Or maybe be like, I'm still going to try and do this, but hey, if there's a high likelihood that's not going to work out the way I want it to, I'm going to try for this too. And I'm going to have my lateral path.
Maybe. I could see that, but I do agree with you, Kyle, and we rarely agree on stuff, but
that's true.
That is true, because there are times in any job, not just in law enforcement, that you believe you're the best for it, but bigger picture, standing back, you are just not what they want.
Right.
It might be personality. It might be size. It might be skill set. Whatever it is, you just don't fit that. And I think it's very respectful, and not enough management does this, where they will tell you, hey, listen, I'm not, you're just not, however they want to word it.
Like, you're not a fit right now for the team.
You're not a fit right now.
You're not what we're looking for.
Yeah. Is there something else you're interested in? I'd like to help you, because a real leader would help you get to something else.
Yeah.
So
that's
true. Yeah.
But ultimately you chose not to pursue other things while you were trying to get on SWAT. So that was like your end goal, which you ultimately got.
Would be SWAT. And then ultimately I was there for 5 years, and then that was the end of it, was when I was injured. So
So do you think you'd still be there, or do you think you would have been like, okay, the next progression, I'm guessing, would have been promotion?
No, I would still be there. At the time when I started, guys had 12, 14 years on. It was a position that you got that you rarely left.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted. That was like my dream. I enjoyed every minute of it, the team, the workouts, all that. And I was going to probably try and do 13 to 15 years, which would only leave me a couple of years left. And then I wanted to go to detectives.
Okay.
I had no interest in promoting. I don't think I would have the skill set to run a team, because I'd be the sergeant out there making stops where people are like, what are you doing?
Like me?
Yeah, I know you do that. I talk to you about that sometimes, but yeah, that's what
so
I wanted.
My boss.
I was going to career it. And then especially if my partner, Patrick, I medically retired before, but if I would have stayed, he would have stayed. And I think we would have jointly stayed as long as the two of us were ready to go, because I wouldn't have left and left him on the team and vice versa. That's your partner. You want to make sure they're the safe. That's who you feel. Yep. I couldn't leave the team leaving him behind, vice versa.
Well, I mean, that's like any small team. Like I think law enforcement as a general, like you, like the brotherhood, sisterhood, whatever, as cliche as it is it's true. But then you get on that smaller team, like a true tactical team or something. It's very much magnified. And then in some instances, you have somebody that you're working with or riding with every day, like your partner.
Yeah.
And that's like even like,
yeah,
like truly we are a family, but like they literally become family. Like,
yeah. Those are the people you're probably doing barbecues and stuff with on your
day. And they'll they'll adjust your, you'll adjust your career for them. I do believe that.
That movie SWAT's based on a true story.
Just kidding. Oh, yeah. Okay. I was like, really? Cause we roasted that movie. No. Okay. So, since I got ragged on, I'll go last. What about you? I actually know your story. You wanted to do canine and then you ultimately ended up in something else. So,
yeah. So, working for a sheriff's department, obviously, I think I spoke about it. I worked corrections for several years. I don't remember exactly how much it is. So, you know, that kind of limits it. And then there's your own career path within corrections. I didn't really do much in there except for wanting to get out, did my patrol. But I can even speak back to when you asked me when I was in corrections, what do you want to do? And I think that I have sometimes troubles thinking about the future too much. And I was like, I want to be a street cop. Just want to be a street cop. That's all I want to do. And they're like, you want to be a street cop? You don't want to be anything? Like, oh, maybe something down the road. I want to be a street cop. Became a patrol deputy and did that for several years. And that's when I was like, oh, okay. Get to work with K-9 a lot. Oh, K-9, you know, that's cool. I like those guys, respected. Usually, for us, they're kind of, you know, the veterans and, you know, they're people you go to for answers, usually before or even after you've gone to your sergeant. Sometimes they have a different view. So I really looked up to them and that's what I was like, I want to do that. I also like the investigation side. I like the street, you know, street crimes kind of thing. I never had any desire to be a detective, I guess, if you want to call
like
it.
Like a burglary
like an after the fact investigations. Mm-hmm. That was never, I liked the proactivity stuff. So with that, I was like, I like gangs too, our gang suppression unit or gang investigations. So I put in for K-9 and I actually didn't have the minimum to put in for it. But I was like, the list sometimes is good for a certain amount of time where maybe there was someone else who was going to leave and I could fall in.
By minimum, just so everybody gets it, like the standards, the qualifications.
Qualification standards. Like I didn't have.
So not standards, like you're not good enough. It's the time.
Well, clearly I guess, that was time, the case. Yeah. Time. No. But yeah, I was.
You're like, not. You didn't meet the minimum qualifications. Clearly, yeah, I just. Know, well, not good enough at my job.
Billy's like, I
colored outside the lines. I colored outside the lines, yeah. I think is what it was.
Give me dog.
You had to have a certain amount of time. I love dog.
I like dog. I pet dog. So I tested and clearly I didn't get it because I didn't meet the standards, which is fine. I knew it going into it, but I wanted to get, and that's another question that we can even bring up. Like, I talked to the actual K-9 supervisor, like, hey, I don't want to waste your guys' time because I knew that I didn't meet the minimum qualifications. And they gave me the blessing to do it, which was great because I learned a lot from it where I was like, the next time when I do it, I'm going to be like, oh, I know the process now. I'm good. But in the meantime, I got the gang investigations asked me or didn't ask me, had a opportunity and they, put out that we call them blue sheets or, you know, they put out a interdepartment like application, put in for it and interviewed and was like, and it's actually one of the best interviews I probably did because the stress wasn't as much there because I was like, if I don't get this, I still want to do the K-9 thing.
Yeah.
But I ended up getting it and that's when I kind of was like, well, K-9's done. And then just kept learning more about this job. That's what I think that for me, I always, again, I can't think of the future too much. I don't know what I want to do for the full rest of my career. But I definitely had the opportunity to go in these different paths and I got the opportunity to go after things that I wanted to because I was like looking around and I didn't know I wanted to do them. I didn't even, my current job that I'm on right now, I don't think I even knew existed.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of people probably don't.
Yeah, I didn't even know it existed. And then when I did know it existed, it was like, it's like, oh, well, you're not going there. You know, that's one of those, it was highly sought after. And I was like, well, you know, I'm not going there, but that would be a cool job. So I didn't even really try to do it.
That's a nice compliment though, because now you are in that spot.
You're in that spot.
Yeah.
To look at that position and be like, idolize that. And then now you're at that spot. That's a huge compliment.
Yeah. And I think that when I went to, I think that if you ask me my goals from a year after patrol, because I think that's when I started to think about my goals, because there was a time where I was like, I want to do the SWAT route. There was definitely that time because I had friends that were doing it and I was like, oh, that's awesome. I think that at that point it was canine, gangs, narcotics, and that was it. That's all I could think of. And I got the opportunity to do two of the three. And it was that order too, because for us, patrol is like a field thing and the detectives is a whole nother division. So that while I do see it as a lateral movement going back to canine, it was kind of, some people are like, well, you're leaving a whole division to go back to patrol. That's the way it was looked at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like, once you took that step to detectives, there's no,
you generally don't.
You generally don't. It was definitely, I could have done it, but you don't. That's not something that.
Yeah. Shout out to all your canine guys at your department, because we're friends with a bunch of them. So, and we're going to get some of them on this show.
Yeah.
Jeb.
Your beard looks really, really good, Billy.
And you wouldn't have been able to have been afforded the opportunity to grow that luxurious thing out had you not gone the route that you did. So be thankful for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So gangs, narcotics. then major narcotics.
No, gangs, then narcotics. It's okay. Just, it's major narcotics for us. And then
the spot that you're in now.
Yeah. Our fugitive team.
I think the reason we're having this conversation is like, there's a lot of people who question themselves in this career. Like, I'm being shoulder tapped for this. I really want to do this. This other spot opened up. Some people have the notion you should just do everything or apply for everything in law enforcement and get a taste of all of it.
I mean, the argument is totally fine. Do you pass up a good situation or not?
I don't even know if it's an argument. Okay, so for me,
it is 100% because I think that, you know, just Mark and I are different. Like Mark said, I want to do SWAT. I didn't know what I wanted to do necessarily, but the one thing I did know I wanted to do, I didn't do.
Yeah. Well, so for me, I'm probably a little probably more leaning towards like what you did. I found out very early on that I wanted to do canine, and I just started working with them a lot, going to trainings. Like I was devoting all of my free time, volunteering my time for 3 years.
Yeah. And that's
to get on that team.
That's an important point is you brought up, you volunteered for SWAT. You volunteered with canine. I volunteered with canine.
And where'd you get bit?
What's that?
Where'd you get bit?
Personal area.
That was awesome. Where'd you get bit? What's that? So I really
I gotta take this. You know?
Yeah, you got a call. I really wanted to do canine, and I was like, I was so dead set on that. Like, I was afforded the opportunity to test for like our SIU team, street crimes, all that, and was shoulder tapped by the supervisor at the time to put in for it, because I was like, man, I was super proactive out on the streets, like I was getting after it, and so it would have been perfect for that spot, but I thought about it for a night. I was like, dude, let me sleep on it for a little bit. And I slept on it. And I just kept circling back to like, I just wanted to be a canine handler. And I felt like if I went that direction, I knew that that's what was going to happen.
Same thing that happened to me.
Same thing that happened to you. So I held out on it. I was like, dude, I called the sergeant. I was like, thank you so much for offering me this. Like, I hope it's not career suicide. I'm going to not put in for it. I'm going to hold out for canine. And you guys know, and canine is like a different beast because you don't know when those spots are going to open.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very like, rare.
It is rare. So I guess depending on where you work, so for us, it's rare. So it just worked out for me that 6 months after I had that phone call conversation with him, a canine spot opened up.
Yeah.
Now it's like, well, dude, one position, you're going to get multiple guys putting in, but I'm like, man, I've been like going out for 3 years. My other buddy was going out too. And then you guys know when a spot opens up, guys start going out to training.
Yeah,
like all of a sudden they're interested.
Yeah.
And it was like, I'm like, no way, I'm getting it. Yeah. And I was like 26 at the time. I was still pretty young. And I put in for it and I didn't get it. And I swear to you, I will never forget this. Working graveyards, I got told I didn't get it. I was pretty mortified. And the other guy that didn't get it was my good friend he's a handler now, but he also didn't get it. It was another guy that just showed up, right?
I know. I remember.
Okay. So
that. Yeah,
I'll say this in front of everybody watching this right now. Like I drove home and dude, like I got teary eyed. I was devastated that I didn't get it. I had put everything into it. And I was scheduled to go to a city function that very next morning. And I was supposed to catch for the canine team because the canine guys were going to be at the city function. City manager's there, council, the chief, like everybody's there, right? It was a big event. And I showed up that very next morning on like 2 hours of sleep to catch the dogs. Everybody was like, wow, you showed up? Like they were shocked. It, to the tune of like the city or the chief pulled me aside afterwards and told me he did not expect me to show up because I didn't get it. And I'm like, hey, you know, that's not my character. I wouldn't just abandon, you know, I was the guy catching the dogs to do this demo.
You committed.
Yeah, I committed to it. And I showed up that next day and it worked out. A few months later, another spot opened up. I had to test for it again and I ended up getting that position. But I'm very, very grateful for all my time that I spent in canine, got to work two dogs. The things that I've got to do as a dog handler has probably led me in the position that I'm in now to even be able to do this podcast or we, you know, training with Savage Training Group and all the experiences that I got with that. I'm grateful for it. So when you ask me that question, I think my answer is I chose my career because I held out on other stuff for that specifically. I guess you're right. There is the argument of like, should you do that or should you not do that? And really, I think if you're asking yourself that and you're in a predicament where you really want something, but something else is coming open, I really do think that it's on you to figure that out yourself. And what is your true passion and what you really want to do?
I think that for me, the reason that I basically didn't take my original path was I had in my mind, I had a path past the path is I want to go to canine and I want to do that. I wanted to work like a dog for the age of the dog. And then once that dog retired, I wanted to go on to gangs.
Yeah.
So that's what totally I want to do. Yeah. So for me, that's why it was an easier decision to be like, oh, okay, well, I'm just skipping that step. Yeah. It's not like I don't think I necessarily changed my path.
Yeah.
So I was somewhat true to my path. But I definitely,
you had like your
goal,
you had your like career goals, like kind of pre-planned out there. Like you, that was something you wanted to do. So for me that, like you said, I just wanted to do canine and I thought I was going to retire out of canine, honestly, until I promoted. But yeah, dude, that's actually a good point is if you have that planned out and A doesn't work out, but B comes open, I think you go with B and
yeah.
Like, why not?
Yeah. And I 100%.
I think some of those decisions, it's easy to say that, but some of those positions are hard because they pay is different. You might not be in a uniform. You might have a take-home car. Your family grooming standards are different. Like there's all kinds of factors, but it comes down to a personal decision and in law enforcement, making those decisions is a family decision.
Yeah, that's actually great. So, that's a good point too.
Yeah. Family's definitely.
Well, that's interesting. I actually didn't know. I knew you always wanted to be canine, and then I did not know you wanted to be canine.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
To the point where I caught dogs for it's probably brutal. Almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. At least over a year.
I will say if you're interested in doing an assignment like that, where like SWAT, canine, where you actually have the ability to go out to like these trainings, I would highly suggest go out to the trainings.
Yeah.
Do what you can to make it work. You may not get paid for it. Oh, well, you volunteer your time and put in the work. I do think that.
Yeah. I think that any position that you want to go to, you better talk and make friends with somebody in that position.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just say, hey, how do I do it? Simple as that. Yep. And they're going to tell you the path because it's different for all those positions. Canine and SWAT is heavy on the volunteers. Most detective positions, there's no opportunity to volunteer for training because there's not a whole lot of training.
But you can have a you but can there chat is with them. The
what's that
you can chat with them and
oh chat out. With them and it's like, hey, what, you know, taking the paper on the call, doing a great job taking that paper and writing talking to reports, them and being like, hey, what do I do? Even asking, there's times where you can ask that detective, maybe that guy's or girl's been there for 10 years, and you're like, hey, can I see some of your reports? And a lot of the time they'll be like, yeah, here you go. And you're like, oh, I never thought of that.
That's
I never
thought of that. Idea.
All right. So kind of transitioning from that conversation is what's been going on all over the nation right now, which is all these protests on college campuses. And, you know, being a cop involved in those types of situations and being on riot teams, mobile force teams, having to actually respond out to these protests and literally be on the front lines of them, it is absolutely, it can be terrifying. I mean, we've all done it. You two have way more experience in it than I do. My only time spent doing it was really during the George Floyd protests in downtown. And I can touch a little bit on that because that was, I mean, I've never experienced anything like that as a cop, ever. And I think you and I were talking the other day about, you know, being on the front lines of that and having these people like inches from your face screaming at you. In any other ordinary situation, we would never allow. But in these types of situations, yeah, we allow it. And it's incredibly uncomfortable as a police officer to be put in that position. But I'm going to let you guys touch on it because you were on your mobile field force team. Mark, you also did a lot of it.
Yeah.
So I'll let you guys touch on that. But it is a pretty interesting conversation.
I think the thing about protests is that, and we're talking about being an officer on a protest or working a protest. This is not political. It's not one side or the other. Your responsibility as a police officer during those protests is to protect property and life. And at certain times you are called in to do that. And I think that's the part that a lot of people don't see. The media portrays as law enforcement battling against a group, whatever that group is. But that the reality is that's what the media shows. But what we're talking about is like our experiences working those lines and working, I'm probably near 100 at least protests on a full-time SWAT team. Our job was the arresting team, but you're put in those positions and you have to go between and make arrests or push people back. And you're right. It is very stressful. You would never allow someone more than 30 feet from you with a baseball bat in a protest. They're 4 feet from you. In any other circumstance, that would never happen. That's scary. It's stressful. You can't do any independent action because you doing something triggers the crowd to do something in response, which puts everybody at harm. That's why generally you see officers standing and have no emotion because you're trained and you're told. In working, I know you've worked in Billy, when you have people standing in front of you, all they do is pick at you. They look at your eyes, they make fun of your eyes, they start trying to get a reaction, and then you look away from them, and then now they got you. And yeah, they look at your duty belt, and they start nitpicking stuff, and your keepers are sideways, or you have a different keychain, or why is your shirt different, or your shirt's not tucked in, or you're heavy set. And they start picking, and you're like, oh my God, and you're like...
Everything. I mean, yeah. I mean, you name it, they'll pick on it. And that's where, like... Uniform becomes important. You definitely want to be have your stuff exactly together and everyone the same because the individual gets picked out. Don't be different.
Yeah.
I don't want to have a beard out there. I'll tell you that much.
No.
You don't want to be that. Well, why do you have a beard? Oh, look at you. You know, whatever it is.
You think you're special. You're more.
Yeah, exactly.
And one of the other things that's interesting about protests is that it's not all going out there in helmets and swinging a baton or making arrests. There's oftentimes, I worked in the city of Sacramento. It's the capital of the state. There was coordinated events of protesters and they would be protesting a cause that they felt strongly about. They would contact the police department and they'd say, we are protesting at this intersection at this time. We'd like to communicate with the police department. The police department say, well, this is what we want. They meet. And they already at times provide information of the people that are willing to be arrested. So you see the protesters, they go out in the street at a certain time, they sit down, they block traffic, police responds. It's a coordinated response. It looks choreographed because for the most part it is. You give the admonishments, you allow them plenty of time to leave. They don't leave. Certain people get up and leave because they don't want to get arrested. The ones that have volunteered to be arrested remain. You give them the admonishments, you no independent action on the line, like our SWAT team would move in, our sergeant would designate certain people to make an arrest. Then you go into your formation, you go out, you go up to that person, you give them the exact admonishment. You let them know that if they don't leave, they're going to be under arrest. And then you, with respect, and you would do this at any time you would make arrest. You say, okay, I'm going to grab your arm. I'm going to help assist you standing up. Go ahead. They stand up. If they're sitting, you respectfully handcuff them because it's, nobody wants to get injured. And then you take them off to the side, they're issued a citation, and then they're booked with the citation, and then they're released. So a lot of the protests are actually choreographed, which people don't really know, but the media looks at it as like, oh my gosh, this is chaos. So some of those are interesting.
Well, there's some videos going around of these college campuses where, you know, it doesn't look like some of it's choreographed, or some of these folks are like literally out of control, throwing themselves on the ground. Like cops are trying to get them out of there. I'm sure they're putting on a show, which obviously the media is going to grab that and put that all over the internet. But that, I guess that's pretty interesting. I never heard of it that way, where like some of these things are so organized where like they literally have people volunteering to get arrested
100%
for their cause.
Well, I mean, yeah. That's an instance of basically a protest where they're peaceful for the most part. They're still they end up breaking the law by not leaving when being told to.
Yeah.
When, you know, the lawful order to. There is the other side of it, which is more what you're talking, is the active aggressors where, you know, they're showing up and they're like, well, it's the people that are yelling at you, you know, that we've been on those front lines and they're picking on you, but now they're taking the next level. They're throwing something.
Bricks, water bottles.
They're like, pushing, they're doing stuff like that. Yeah. Whereas I've been involved with both situations too, where it's just like, okay, well, you've asked you to leave, given you ample amount of time. You guys are causing a disturbance where you're unlawfully blocking a road or something like that. And our goal then is just, hey, we have to preserve peace, and peace is, you know, letting things continue. So we take that and take care of that. And then the other is where it's directed towards you, like straight up, I want to hurt you.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what I want. And that's kind of, that's kind of what the media is picking up more on, yeah, is the,
and that's hard because
the violence side.
As an officer, you're defending yourself, but it's a no-win situation.
The rules of engagement change.
It does. And
100%.
And you are supposed to be unbiased, and you're put in a position where you have to do something. And one side is going to believe you're on them versus vice, yeah, versa. And it's like, no cop wants to go to a protest, a violent protest, and touch anyone. No. You don't want that. Like, you don't want that fight. You don't want to get hurt. It's incredibly scary. You don't want your knees blown out, like your shins kicked in the groin, like things thrown at you. There's urine thrown on you. Like, you don't know what these people have, and they have all kinds of creative things that they come up with that are disgusting. They hurt you. They can get it in your eyes. But if you wear glasses and no one else, like, they're going to pick on you. Protests are no joke. And there are major cities across this country that I hands down applaud those officers for their professionalism, because mm-hmm. they endured that for months at times.
I know. I see. Yeah, that's what we're seeing on the news with these big cities, you know, like in New York and other cities, where every single day, day in and day out, these guys are gearing up and going out there. And
I think New York's probably not, or is and isn't the best example. I'm guessing they have a team, and that is,
yeah,
what I mean, they do.
Okay, so California Highway Patrol, right, in California, so have a team, a response team.
I think that,
but smaller does agencies,
the Highway Patrol necessarily have, like, I don't know, maybe someone can answer this, like a full-time dedicated.
They have a designated team. That
I know they have, but oh, is, yeah, that all they do?
At the Capitol? I don't know.
I think they also,
it's like,
have
an ancillary
things.
Position.
Yeah.
Where, like, hey.
Where I think the NYPD has, like, you are the.
Yeah.
Okay, so what about a smaller agency that is not a full-time thing, but these cops are still going out there and having to do that? Similar to what we were feeling during the George Floyd riots.
I mean, it's the same. Like, I mean, I would love to talk to those New York guys or whatever team has a full-time team or whatever it is, because I'm sure that they train it and they're really good at it.
Well, they got to be really, benefits, really good at it. There are benefits of working multiple protests. I could tell you the first one I worked, my demeanor, my body language, my responses were way different at protest number 5 versus protest number 70.
Yeah.
And you can tell, and they can tell, because you're professional, you respect what people are doing. And then when resources get strained because protests are ongoing, they start pulling resources because people get hurt, you get exhausted, you get tired. And then they start pulling detectives, people that don't work the streets. They put a uniform on, and then they start taking those things personal. And you can tell the difference. That's where the training, like, experience comes in. Mm-hmm. I think you at one point had to go down into downtown and work that. And it's, yeah, like, it was, the exposure is like, what?
Yeah. I mean, well, and during those, it was like, those people had a serious grind against you and name calling and throwing stuff at you. Like, they did. I felt like at times they wanted to hurt you.
Oh yeah.
And when you're surrounded by thousands of people, you're way outnumbered. And I mean, if they really wanted to, they would absolutely overrun you.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That, 100%. I think, to me was the scary part of, holy shit, at any second, this could go really bad. And because I'm wearing this uniform, I'm in a lot of trouble. Like that's, yeah. that was the feeling that I had. They were that angry towards us. And I've never in 18 years of being a cop have ever been treated like that as a police officer.
I think that for me, the main takeaway of working so many protests and seeing this stuff going on in the media and then even in the past, I just want the general public that doesn't have that exposure to know that it is really stressful. You're put in positions that are very uncomfortable, different sides, you're down the middle, you're forced to battle one side to protect property or people, and it never looks good, and it is not an enjoyable thing to do that. Nobody wants to go to work and do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never enjoyed doing it. I can say that.
Yeah.
It's not the only way you can know about it is truly experiencing it. I think is, your own feelings of it. And, you know, I'm sure there's people out there that might love going to protest. There could be, I don't think any of us are, but I think
people legitimately get curious about like, what are they really like? And they're completely out of it. They just want to see it for themselves. And there are people that will go down to these protests just to see it. And then they get caught up in bad situations.
Well, I mean, like, and George Floyd was one that, you know, I was involved with that kind of stuff too. And I'd say 90%, except for that, was peaceful. Like that I've dealt with where, you know, they want to come, they want to yell, they want to tell you that, you know, your beard's ugly or, you know, your uniform's messed up or whatever. And they want to do that. And that's fine. And that never bugs me.
Like there were literally like kids running up to you and literally calling you a name just because like they felt like they could, which they could at the, you know, it's like, okay. But people were jumping on the bandwagon of like, oh, I'm going to run down to this cop and call him a fucking, you know, some bad word or whatever. It's like, oh, cool.
And then that switch flipped. And when that happens, you're like, oh, and you can feel it. You really can feel it and see it. Well, and I was like, oh, this is changing.
So what I felt like for that was you had in daytime, you did have legitimate people who wanted to voice their opinion and cause and all that. Fine. Totally well within your First Amendment rights. And they were law abiding people. They were not breaking the rules. It was really when I think the sun was going down and then it was like these organized criminal people were coming out and completely abusing the situation and were actively looking to commit crime. That to me was an entire different group of people than the folks that were out there trying to do what and say what they wanted to say. Like there was just, to me, it was like two different groups of people. And then everyone just kind of got lumped into, you know, one big protest. And so at least from our perspective, that's what I saw.
I think, and I know I wasn't going to say anymore, but I do want to kind of add one more thing on that. I think
your time's up.
what a lot of people don't know too, is like, at least in the state in California at the Capitol, when you have protests and rallies on the state grounds of the Capitol, they don't just show up to do that. They get permits to come onto the grounds and to voice their opinions. So they're doing it the right way. Mm-hmm. And you do get it, at least, and I'll speak from the city of Sacramento, you get people that get permits and they say, this is our march. This is the route that we're going to take. And the city looks at it in management and goes, okay, do we battle this or do we work with these people, block traffic, make it safe for them to do their protests, to get their voices heard, to get on the media. Mm-hmm. They respect our department. We respect what they're doing. There's no one getting hurt. And after their 2-hour rally,
there's no conflict.
But when what happens when that rally and that is, and you say they respect you when it is literally an anti-law enforcement rally, and then they don't have permits and they don't have it and you're still doing the same thing. You're still closing roads. Yeah, and that's the new reality, I think, is that they're not organized like they were. And it's not like, hey, we're going to do this. This is the path that we're going to take. And it's over plastic use and something. I don't know. It's, hey, we hate you and we don't want you guys to do anything, but you know, we need you there so that we don't get ran over. But then we also want you there because how am I going to yell at you if you're not there?
Yeah. I think that's the hard part of being an officer that works a protest.
Yeah.
And you know what? Law enforcement still shows up. They still provide that security and we still have a job to do.
They do. But I think that as if you're an organizer of law enforcement for these things, you have to look at it as what are you going to do? Sometimes not doing, if, hey, we're going to show up into this parking lot and, you know, it's a closed parking lot. Nobody, we're not hindering any business and we want to protest anti-law enforcement. Like, okay. I'd say, cool, high five. And there's no point in law enforcement showing up because
I remember working. Well, this has been a really good conversation. I love sitting down at the table and just shooting the shit with you guys. It's always a good time. Glad you made it back in with us. Hopefully you can pop in more.
I hope so too. I hope to be able to do this.
And if you flake, don't worry, dude.
We're used to it. It's not if, it's when.
That's true. Yeah.
I do remember Billy was sitting where you were, Kyle, and right before we start recording, you're like, get out of my seat.
I'm the
middleman.
Right. Yeah. You could be, you're the third wheel.
Yeah. It's like he needs that king's chair with the gold.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
All kinds of the throne.
No, we can't do that. It's just going to keep growing.
Well, I just want to say,
this was great, Billy.
Yeah. No, this has been a ton of fun, you guys. If you want more of this content, make sure you drop a comment in the video below. And you guys will automatically be entered a chance to win this medic box. It is full of cool stuff. Chest seals, gauze. Oh, there goes our cup. Go figure it was Billy.
Yeah.
And these 11 tools in one multi shears, easily folds up, fits in your pocket. Drop a comment, guys. This stuff is pretty cool and we want to be able to give it to you. So let's wrap it up. Thank you again.
Yeah. Thank you guys for letting me come back.
Yeah. Always, dude. Be safe and be smart.
We'll catch you guys on the next episode. Later.